IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Welcome to the 28 college lacrosse season, and welcome to a new year of the Inside Lacrosse Women's Podcast. I am Matt Kinnear, joined by Hallie Quillen and Griggs. Hallie, it's always exciting when we kind of get to this early February. You know, maybe we wish it was early March that we were having this conversation, but early February period, where we are jumping into a new season. We've had this conversation many times, but man, women's lacrosse feels like it's just at its peak right now. It feels like there's so much excitement around the sport. Things that the rules have done, the exciting players, the expansion to the West. It's a topic of discussion that we're going to have in our March issue of Inside the Cross magazine. But, Hallie, can you feel the excitement right now?
I can. I think it's definitely, it has a little bit of that Christmas feeling, just because, you know, with the universal start date, with lacrosse all kicking off with that February 9th, Friday Night Lights feel, I'm excited. You know, I feel like in years past, games were inching into January, and, you know, some teams were four games into their season before, the Ivy League teams were practicing. So I'm really excited that, you know, there is that one universal start date. All these teams are opening up, on the same day or at least the same weekend. And I'm excited. And I agree. You know, I think with especially the recent rules changes, everything we've seen last year, of course, with the possession clock this year, that'll hit the D2 and D3 ranks. Free movement coming into the women's game. I do agree that, you know, the women's lacrosse is it's good as it's ever been, and it's only getting better. So I think the game that we're going to see this year is the most exciting we've seen to date. And, the talent and the teams are there. I feel like every single year we lose a Kayla Trainer and a Taylor Cummings. And, you know, certainly last year was Zoe Stukenberg. But the players that come in, the freshman All-Americans that we don't even know about yet, that's what makes this time of year incredibly exciting for me personally.
It is a really long lacrosse season. That's why you need to stay hydrated. And we do that here at Inside Lacrosse with Trimino. 7 grams of whey protein, no sugars, no carbs, no fats, only 28 calories. And it's 7 delicious flavors that it is available in, including 3 new ones, citrus, orchard, and raspberry limeade. You need to get Trimino. It is infused water, 7 grams of whey protein, and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. Ideal before, during, or after your workout. Hydrate with a beverage as versatile as you are. Play hard, not hungry. Trimino is available at CVS, local retailers near you, and always on Amazon. Protein never tasted so good. Women's lacrosse is definitely leading the way in the sport right now. So many things that are positives in the sport have really kind of come from the women's game. You mentioned the possession clock, and we're going to talk a little bit about the rules later, but the fast-paced brand of lacrosse that is happening in women's right now is so exciting to watch. The recruiting legislation largely stemmed from conversations from the women's lacrosse coaching body. Just so much good stuff, and the universal start date is one thing that you mentioned that I think we all think is a positive, and Stony Brook coach Joe Spallina kind of turned it into a media event in addition to, you know, what it is the start of the season. Started a Midnight Madness type feel. You know, I'm a Terp, and Midnight Madness is so closely associated with Maryland basketball. You know, they were kind of the team that started that tradition on the basketball front, but Coach Spallina started that as a women's lacrosse thing, and, you know, hopefully it's something we see more teams kind of latch on to, but that's a good segue in terms of preseason. Stony Brook preseason number 2 in the Cascade Media poll that we post on Monday. They were number 2 in the Faceoff Yearbook as well. Maryland, Stony Brook, reigning national champ, the team that is just the class of women's lacrosse in Maryland, and then the team that everybody's talking about in Stony Brook. Hallie, who was in your preseason top 5 and why?
I couldn't agree more. You know, Maryland, the reigning champ, quietly, and it's crazy to say this, but quietly compiled an unblemished, undefeated record en route to a 13th NCAA title, 14th overall national championship. It's crazy that they're not the team that everybody's talking about, but I think that that's just by virtue of the fact that people are excited to talk about someone new, and I think that that's what's so attractive about Stony Brook. What they were able to do last year, I think they make it exciting, taking nothing away from Maryland. You know, if they're not one, they're two, in my experience as the women's editor inside the Cross. I'm heading into my fifth season covering, and if they haven't been ranked number one, they've been ranked number two. I haven't seen them drop further than that. You know, heading into the season, I tend to approach how I rank my teams or who the best team on paper is heading into the season and how I think that they'll fare throughout their regular season and, of course, into May. I think a lot of people also take the approach how teams fared last year, you know, who that reigning champ was, how the rankings kind of shuffled last year. Of course, I take the first approach, and with that, my number one was Stony Brook. I think that top to bottom, you know, their offense, a lot of people talk about it, but they have a first-team All-American in Brooke Kubatowski on the defensive end. Anna Tesorio in goal, she's been fantastic. Stony Brook's zone defense is one of the most underrated, overachieving defense for what they do. I think that they consistently churn All-Americans out at the defensive position, and they just play so well together. So I think take what they do defensively with the offensive star power. No team in the country returns three 100-point scorers. That's special. You know, Kylie O'Miller had a special year last year. I think that returning with the experience and talent returning, they were my number one team with Maryland in the number two spot. I think Maryland has all of the talent in the world. They just need some of the experience to step up. You know, they graduated to Wharton winner. They graduated to Wharton finalist. They've proven that they can do that and still win. But I'm excited to see how certain players mature. Callie Hartshorn, I think that she's going to be a star offensively. I'm excited to see her take on a larger role with the departure of Caroline Wannan. I'm really excited to see what Megan Siverson does. You know, she comes in transferring out of Louisville with Kathy Rudkin on the defensive end. You know, those are two All-American caliber transfers. And then, of course, they bring in one of the top recruiting classes in the country. So I really think it's, you know, Maryland, Stony Brook, and then a bit of a drop or a step until your next three. I had, you know, North Carolina in the number three spot, Marie McCool, Ella Hazar in their senior year, Maggie Bill is back. Of course, they bring in Allie Mastriani and Jamie Ortega, you know, the top attacker and, you know, two of the top high school players in the country over the course of their career. So I'm excited to see them. And 4-5, you know, I think that this is really a toss-up, but just because Penn State has been a bit more successful in their postseason endeavors, you know, two back-to-back Final Four appearances. I had Penn State, Florida rounding out my top five, and I'm very excited to see, you know, who is Penn State without Steph Lazo. I'm really excited to see Katie O'Donnell step up in her senior year. And for Florida, I'm excited to see the Gators go to work. I think that, you know, they don't really talk about, you know, the postseason exits they've made a little too early. But I think that there's motivation there. You know, I don't think by any means it's the elephant in the room. But I think that they're just talking about what they can do this year. And I think that they use that as some motivation. I think they want to get back to championship contention.
The Maryland Stony Brook conversation. It's interesting to hear your philosophy on that, Hallie, because I have a slightly different take on it. You know, I put Maryland as number one and Stony Brook as number two in my poll that I vote in. And it's just kind of my philosophy on voting these. I don't necessarily always vote the reigning national champion as the number one team. I didn't do that in the men's Division I poll. I voted Duke as the number one team there. But I do think there's an important sense of history that needs to be considered when you do these polls. It's the reason why Salisbury is the number one team in Division III, even though Wesleyan, on the men's side, arguably has the best players on paper. There is just that X factor of having been there, knowing the program is just built to compete for national championships, built to go deep into May. There's a culture there that I think just is tough to overcome. And that's why I kind of favor those maybe historic powers a little bit more. Obviously, I love it when teams come in and surprise us and prove us wrong, but Maryland was not my number one. Don't think there's a wrong answer. There obviously isn't a way to predict some of the chemistry that develops with these teams over the year. There isn't a way to predict the bad breaks that someone's going to get. It doesn't necessarily mean that Maryland's winning the national championship. Your number one pick for Stony Brook doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win the national championship. We can't really predict that from right here, but that's why I go Maryland over Stony Brook. Nothing to take away from Kylie O'Miller, who I said last year was the face of women's lacrosse. So, really interesting debate that we're going to see develop over the year. And, you know, if it culminates in May like we did last year with those two teams facing each other, let's hope that it's at championship weekend and not earlier in May like it was this past season.
Couldn't agree more. I refer to that game as the national championship game.
Wow. But we did have quite a championship weekend there with some Cinderellas in there as well. Hallie, the Tourton race, kind of sticking with the Kylie O'Miller theme. Last year was pretty hotly contested. You know, there's a lot of people who think that Kylie should have won that award last year. Zoe Stukenberg, obviously very deserving and a great player and probably even better person with some of the work that she's doing. Looking into 2018, who's leading that race for you?
You know, I think Kylie O'Miller, of course, is leading that race. I think she led it last year. Pretty much throughout the entire season, I think what she accomplished in the women's game, breaking a single-season points record, of course, Jen Adams held that, and single-season assists record, of course, Hannah Nielsen held that. Two of the game's all-time greats. A lot of people call Jen the GOAT. You know, for her to do that in 2017, and really, I think she left it all out there in the field. You know, I referenced that quarterfinal matchup between Stony Brook and Maryland. I think that that was the national championship game. That game decided the national champion. If Maryland did not advance, I think Stony Brook would have won their first ever national title last year. So, you know, I think that what she did last year, carrying that momentum into this year, I don't know who can stop her. But, you know, there certainly are some outlier players who I think that, you know, I don't necessarily think they're dark horses in this race. It's hard to call Marie McCool a dark horse. I think that she's 100% hands down the top midfielder in the college game heading into this season. And I think that last year she learned a lot as the go-to middie for a North Carolina team that, yes, captured an ACC crown, but, two, didn't make its way to championship weekend. And I think that this North Carolina team is carrying that game into this year. They want to be back in the Final Four. That's the gold standard down in Chapel Hill. So I think that with Marie McCool leading the charge, I think Ella Hazar is one of the most underrated attackers in the country. And then, of course, Maggie Bill is back. So I think the three of them, with Marie McCool as its leader, North Carolina is right there. So that's really 1-2 in my Tourton race. I think other players you have to keep an eye on. Megan Taylor, the reigning goalkeeper of the year. You know, every year Maryland has a player in this conversation. You know, this year Maryland has quite a few players that could be in that conversation. I've heard great things about what Megan Siverson's been doing there. Of course, you have Megan Whittle. But Megan Taylor, really, I think that she was one of the reasons that Maryland was so successful last year. You know, she has just been such an incredible leader and goal, kind of orchestrating that defense in front of her. And then, you know, you have to look at a player like Jenna Collins. I think you have to throw in Sam Apuzzo, Kenzie Kent, if she plays. You know, there's this asterisk next to Kenzie. You know, I think when Kenzie hit the field in April, and of course how she played throughout May, there was not a more dominant player in the college game than Kenzie Kent. If she plays this year and if she has a similar type production, do you give a Tourton to a player that didn't play in February and in March? That's really tough to do. But should she be in that conversation? Absolutely. Or do you give it to her counterpart that played throughout the entire season and consistently puts this team in contention for its postseason play? I think Sam Apuzzo is one of the top attackers in the game. She's fantastic on the draw, and I'm very excited to see how she does in particular with now a full fall season healthy under her belt, first and foremost, but two, learning under Kayla Traynor. I think seeing Sam Apuzzo's jump from her freshman year to her sophomore year was huge, especially after her ACL. But now coming back to her junior season, learning under Kayla Traynor, who I think is one of the most exciting players this sport has ever seen, men or women, and her work on the attacking circle, but especially her work on the draw, we're going to see a whole new type of player in Sam Apuzzo this year. And I think if there's maybe a dark horse in the Tartan race, it's her.
Jenna Collins at Navy is someone you had in your Player of the Year watch in the Face-Off yearbook. I got to spend some time with her and Julia, her twin sister. Great people. You know, the Naval Academy has some unique things about it, some unique challenges, some unique opportunities. So it was great to spend some time with her. And Kelly Larkin, when I got to observe some of the practice, whenever she touched the ball, there was just an urgency that you just felt it through the whole field. So someone to watch, you know, that trio had 300 points last year. So keep an eye on the mids, and we'll talk a little bit more about them when we talk of some of our Cinderella teams maybe for this season, although being a top 10 team preseason doesn't quite make you a Cinderella. Hallie, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here. This weekend, it's a soft opening to the season, I guess you could say. You know, not all the bells and whistles, not every team is playing yet. Obviously, the Ivy League is just kind of getting started with practice. What do you expect from this weekend, and what is it, you know, what are the games that people can kind of sink their teeth into and watch here?
I'm excited. I mean, opening weekend, we saw it on the men's side last weekend. There's always an upset, right? So I think it's just kind of a matter of, you know, throwing a dart at the board and wondering who that team is going to make a strong statement. Because, you know, and that's it. That might be a different team that can carry that through all the way throughout the season. I think that sometimes you see teams open up with a big statement over a top 10 team or how they perform against a top 10 team. And consistently, I think JMU plays North Carolina hard right out of the gate. I think both of these coaches like this matchup because, you know, I think that for the Dukes, it's, you know, opening up against North Carolina lets you know where you are and where you need to be in order to compete with the best of the best. And for Coach Levy, she wants her team to be challenged out of the gate. And that's what JMU has provided North Carolina seasonally, you know, over the last few years. So I like that matchup. You know, I think certainly North Carolina is still favored, but I'm excited to see what Haley Warden and James Madison can do this year. Virginia Tech, USC. You know, USC is a very different team than they were last year. Michaela Michael did a lot for them. So I'm excited to see what USC looks like in, you know, that post-Michaela Michael era. I think a lot of that work will fall on the shoulders of Kerrigan Miller. I'm really excited to see her jump from freshman year to sophomore year. And then Virginia Tech. This is John Sung's second year. And he took a team that had consistently been at the bottom of the pack and really hadn't competed in the ACC to a team that pulled out multiple wins in the ACC and nearly upended Syracuse in the ACC tournament. So I think Virginia Tech has just been on the up and up, so has USC, but I'm excited to see this untraditional early season matchup. And then, you know, I think the game of the weekend is that ACC opener, BC versus Notre Dame. I think for a weekend one ACC matchup, I can't remember the last time two teams from the same conference that were top 20, top 10 teams opened up with each other. So I'm interested to see the scheduling rationale, but nonetheless, I'm very excited. I think that Notre Dame is a team that's going to look a lot different this year. They don't have Courtney Fortunato. They don't have Pearsall in the midfield. What does Andy Aldave do in her first year? How does Savannah Buchanan mature from a freshman to a sophomore? I'm just excited to see what Notre Dame looks like this year. And BC, of course, BC is the asterisk team. You just don't know if Kenzie Kent's going to join. And they're a different team when she does. But I'm very excited to see how BC's heavy underclass roster that made a national championship appearance last year looks as a seasoned vet roster. You know, the bulk of their defensive lineup last year, they were sophomores. Now they're juniors, they're upperclassmen. They've played together. They've started together for two, heading into three seasons now. And of course, Apuzzo is that X factor for this team. I take BC in this matchup, but I'm very excited to see what both of these teams look like this year.
I love the conference game to start the season. It's one of those things that, you know, obviously if I was a head coach at a program, I'm sure I would absolutely hate it. But I love it, you know, just from a fan's perspective. You know, I would love to see a schedule scenario where maybe half your conference games are at the beginning, half are at the end, and then the middle is all non-conference. Or, your conference schedule just ends earlier in the year and you end the season with non-conference games. You know, so maybe if you don't win your conference tournament, you know you have that big non-conference game as maybe your other way into the NCAA tournament. So just love the outside-the-box scheduling. I'm not sure the rationale behind that, but definitely at least makes a weekend that's a little bit light more exciting to start it out for us. So kudos to those coaches for kind of making that happen for us. Hallie, looking back at last year, we're still kind of in predictive mode of, you know, 2018. Looking back to this time, you know, 2017, to this time now in 2018, what's kind of one lesson that we can learn, you know, as we approach this year? You know, maybe something that we said or did early in 2017 or something we thought that was, you know, disproven by the stuff that we saw on the field, a lesson that we can learn for 2018.
You know, it's funny. We've talked about this. I was just talking to Sheehan Stanwyck-Birch, who will be joining us next week on this podcast, about this. I think that this time last year, but really let alone Selection Sunday last year, if you would have told me who would be dancing all the way to Foxborough, I never would have told you BC and Navy in the same conversation. You know, sure, Maryland, Penn State, they've been there before. That might have been a safe pick. But one Cinderella team that had never made a championship appearance, let alone two, that was unique. And I think what that taught us is women's lacrosse is getting there. You know, anyone can beat anyone on any given day, which I think is very exciting for the sport, the growth of the sport. We've seen it grow all over the country at the youth level. Now it's trickling up to the college level, which I think is really exciting. But I think one thing you can take from 2018 is you just never know. And I think that that's what's really exciting. You know, Navy was a team, and BC too. They got off to a slow start. I mean, BC lost to Syracuse by about 10 goals last year. And then in the NCAA tournament, you know, months later, they beat them by about 10. That's a 20-goal swing in the span of a few months. So I think that this time of year means a lot. It means a lot for chemistry, how the team plays, getting new players on the field, adjusting to the new rules, adjusting to each other. But this time of year, I think, is so important for that. Maybe for a team that's, you know, unranked or a little lower in the rankings, if they can pull off a big win this time of year, that really helps you come tournament time. But I think once Selection Sunday comes, it doesn't matter. You know, and that was what's really exciting to see last year. And I think that that's what some other teams can bring into this year. You know, if you are the head coach at Louisville this year, Virginia Tech, if you're out, and, you know, if you're at Oregon, you point to your players and say, look what happened last year. That could be us this year. And I think that that's really exciting for the sport.
Certainly is an exciting time. The sport expanding as well to the West Coast with Pac-12 lacrosse beginning this year. We'll talk a little bit more about that in coming weeks. But let's look at the All-Americans. You just posted these on the website today. They've been in the Face-Off yearbook. You know, Boston College, a team you just mentioned, two players as first-team All-Americans. Obviously, this is the asterisk rule comes into play again with Kenzie Kent, you know, being a first-team All-American. Her status is going to be unclear until she steps out, you know, onto the field or doesn't. You have two players from Stony Brook, Courtney Murphy and Kylie O'Miller. Just the dangerous duos in this sport are just absolutely fascinating. That goes down, and you know, Marie McCool and Ella Hazar and stuff like that too. So, All-Americans, what's the surprises that you've seen? What are the things that the reaction that you've, you know, heard from coaches and people? Your overall take on these All-Americans?
You know, it's funny. I think we're going to get a lot of reactions today. So I could answer this question a lot differently next week, but I'm going to try to call out kind of a little bit of how we approach our media All-Americans at Inside the Cross, which is how we would field the team. So with some of the coaching associations that publish their All-Americans, you know, there are sometimes 6, 7, 8 attackers on an All-American team. So one thing that we wanted to do as a staff was really make our All-American team look like how we would put them on a field. So that, of course, was 4 attackers, four defenders, a goalie, three middies, and a draw specialist. We felt it was very important to put a draw specialist in there because they've really become the norm in the sport, just like a face-off specialist in the men's side of the game has come. So that's a little bit of the method to our madness. And, of course, a lot of it comes down to, you know, picking hairs and really some votes at the end of the day. So it was very close call between some of our first and second team attackers. I'll let the fans kind of do what they will with that. But Kenzie Kent, you know, certainly the asterisks. A lot of people might say out of the gate, how do you put her on a first team if you don't know if she's going to play? Well, we don't know if any of these players are going to play. You know, look who was on the first team All-American last year, Courtney Murphy, and she sustained an ACL tear. So we approach it as if all of these players are healthy and expected to play and contribute the way they did a season ago, that's how we made this team. And in my opinion, Kent's on that list. I think a lot of people might be a little surprised to see, say, even a Jenna Collins on there, you know, but how do you not? If you look at the resume that she put together last year, leading her team's charge in the midfield, the point production that she had, I think that she's a first-team midfielder in my book. She went toe-to-toe last year with some of the best middies in the game en route to her NCAA semifinal appearance. And I think that this is a very strong first team lineup. On the second team, I wouldn't be surprised to see any of those second teamers, third teamers, honorable mention even, make the jump to a first team at the end of the season, especially Madison Carter, Ella Hazar, Megan Whittle. Just as you mentioned, Kelly Larkin. I think Riley Donahue is going to do great things for Syracuse this year. Olivia Conti, you know, she led Towson's charge last year as a freshman defender. She earned All-American honors. You know, I'm excited to see what Brittany Reed does out at Oregon. You know, the reigning ACC Defensive Player of the Year ships out west to Oregon in the inaugural year of the Pac-12. Can she help bring that experience and that leadership to a Ducks program that wants to make history? So I'm really excited to see a lot of these players. Of course, Dempsey Arsenal at Boston College will be playing that midi-D hybrid role this year. I'm excited to see what Selena Lasota does coming back healthy. So I think that, you know, these lists, take them with a grain of salt, take them as you will. I'm excited to see, most importantly, how this list changes between now, our midseason lineup, and then, of course, our postseason team as well.
A thing that I don't think people realize it is we love it when people prove us wrong. At least I do. You know, if every first team preseason All-American was a first team All-American at the end of the year, if every number one team was the national champion at the end of the year, why would we play the games? We would just put out a preseason book and a postseason book and call it a day. This is the reason we play. We love doing this, you know. We love the stories of the player who was overlooked and, you know, works their tail off in the off season and is a first team All-American, or the player who has a slow start and in May is just the hero. You know, if there's a message for anyone out there listening, it's that, like, these are preseason prognostications. They're best guesses from people who know what they're talking about and have talked to lots of people, but they're just that, you know, there's that X factor, that drive that, we can never determine that. We can hear sometimes some rumblings of, oh, this person might be a first-team All-American if they had more work ethic. But, you know, we can't tell who's that player with the chip in their shoulder who's been in the weight room all off-season, you know, and ready to dominate. And maybe the new rules affect some players in ways that we don't know, which is our next topic of discussion. New rules 2018. The women's lacrosse leadership has really done interesting things in an effort to speed up the game and make the game more exciting. This year, you know, free movement, holding on the line for draw, stick stringing, you know, mesh, stick rules are all kind of new things to look for this year. How will they affect the game in 2018, Hallie?
You know, I think that it depends what game you're talking about. You know, I think the D2 and the D3 game is going to look like an entirely different game this year. It's going to be so much faster. Come conference playoff time and NCAA tournament time, it's going to be so much more exciting because I think that that's really what we saw last year. In the possession clock era, nobody's in the driver's seat and no longer can you take the air out of the ball and stall. And again, I always say this, you know, I don't like that. but I like to win. So if, you know, if that's in the rule book and it allows you to win a game and win a national championship, which is something that I would have dreamed of doing, but I didn't get to do, power to you. You know, teams that won with Stalling, that, you know, that's how you win. But now that you can't do it, name a more exciting postseason than what we saw last year in the D1 ranks. You can't. Because the games were back and forth until the very final whistle, which was so exciting. I think that, you know, look at the Navy-Boston College NCAA semifinal game. That came down to the last 10 seconds. Navy-North Carolina. You know, these games were so exciting because they were such back-and-forth blowouts. So I think that that's something we're going to see in the D2 and D3 ranks, which is very exciting. And, of course, the free movement. It's funny, you know, I think that's a huge rules change. But it's not going to make the sport look all too differently. It's going to make it look like the rest of sport. You know, certainly men's lacrosse, the free movement aspect, but soccer, basketball. You know, it's just going to make women's lacrosse look a bit more fan-friendly and appealing to the non-lacrosse player that might want to pick up a stick. It no longer looks like freeze tag. So I really like that rule. I love its complement to the possession clock. It's just going to be a more up-and-down game. I think the rules change that will have the biggest impact is the held on the line for the draw, because now it makes your draw team that much more important. So akin to the men's face-off, where you have to hold off the line and let your, you know, three-person face-off or draw team go to work and gain possession, that's what we're going to see in women's lacrosse this year. So that's huge. I think we're going to see draw control numbers continue to skyrocket for these players individually. And then, of course, those players on the line, they certainly are important, but your players on the circle are that much more important. You know, you put your top draw specialists and your two most feisty, fast off the line, ground ball magnet kids on the circle and, you know, hope to God that you get the ball. So I think that that's going to be a big rule change. And of course the stick stringing, now the allowance of mesh, I kind of call it the opening of the floodgates in the women's lacrosse rule book, which is rare. That never happens. This is a rule that I was a bit surprised to see come through. So I think that the stick stringing, people are still trying to figure out what to do with mesh, how they like it, how to string it. So I actually don't necessarily think that, at least in my experience picking up these sticks, I don't like the way that mesh as an attacker helps me shoot the ball or control the ball. I don't feel like there's as much control in my pocket. So it'll be interesting to see who's using mesh this year. I think where you're going to see a big increase in mesh is in that draw specialist stick because of the pocket it continues to give you there on the other side of the stick. So if you think about where your stick hits the other stick, it gives you a little bit more of that back pocket for a draw. So I think that that's going to be big. I'm just excited to see who's using it, you know, who's mixing up how they string sticks. I'm very excited to see the non-7 to 15-minute discussions and stick checks in the middle of ACC tournament games to decipher whether the stick is legal, whether the stick is illegal. So I think that that alleviates pressures on the referee tenfold. I think the NCAA committee's job is to make a referee's focus on the game, not on the stick stringings. Is this happening? Is this person, quote, cheating? They need to watch for the black and white. So I think that all of these rules help them do that. They no longer, you know, for this free movement, they no longer have to watch for the player that's inching a couple steps when the ref's not looking. They don't have to worry about that. They don't have to have eyes in the back of their head. So I think all of these rules help refs, but I'm excited to see kind of the change and the impact they have this year.
Stick stringing is really interesting because it's kind of affected the industry at this point more than it's affected the gameplay. Like you said, I think it's going to take a little bit for it to really kind of translate on field how that's going to work. But the U.S. Lacrosse Convention, I can't ever remember there being so much focus on the women's gear. And I think the stick stringing, you know, the new rules there have kind of opened up, you know, some market opportunities for various companies there. So that's an interesting byproduct of that that won't necessarily affect what we see on game day. But Hallie, now it's the time that I know you love, the predictions where I put you on the spot with different predictions about the game. We'll start with the month ahead of us, February. What is the biggest upset in February going to be?
Oh, the biggest upset. Well, I will say I think that this is going to be a tough one. But I think an upset that would shock the lacrosse world in February, that's how I'll phrase it. Not my biggest anticipated upset, but I think what could be the biggest upset, if Maryland goes down to Florida in 2 weeks and Florida comes out with the win, I think that's exactly the exclamation point win that this Florida program needs right now. So one, I don't know if it'll happen. But I think that that would be an early season upset that would shock the lacrosse world, because Florida, you know, this is a program that's been right there with those top two, three, four teams, but they haven't been able to jump the hump and get that big Maryland win. So I think that if they can beat Maryland to kick off, you know, their strong start to the season before they head into, you know, certainly some other tough matchups, but, you know, their Big East schedule, I think that that's going to be huge. So I'm going to leave that there for my biggest February upset.
Okay. This weekend, in terms of top 20 games, how do you feel about Towson over Penn State? Is that something that could happen?
I don't know. I think that Penn State is just going to be so good this year. I think Towson could be right there. They were. Towson started last year with one, a very close matchup in this game in particular. They almost beat Stony Brook last year this time. But they had a pretty disappointing exit to their season last year. I think Towson was one of those teams that started out so strong right there. Of course, they had that Notre Dame win last year, but then they lost a little steam. So it'll be interesting. Do they start off the way they did last year? Then I think it could be a close game, but I just like Madison Carter way too much on the draw circle. And I don't think that, I think that that's where Towson's going to struggle against Penn State. Madison Carter is such a strong attacker, but where she puts the nail in the coffin is on the draw. So I think in that matchup, I don't think anyone can challenge her on the draw circle to make that an upset.
Sticking kind of with an underdog upset theme, who are some of the underdogs who might win their conference this year? You know, the guys, the teams that aren't necessarily picked to finish number one, but might be able to challenge those crowns there.
You know, like, who's the Navy in 2018? You know, certainly it's not Navy because now they're favorites to win the Patriot League. But, you know, I think some way ahead conference underdog champs, if you look at who is supposed to win their conference, of course, Maryland, you know, they're the Big Ten favorite. And it's crazy to say this, but I think Northwestern is the Big Ten underdog. They are a team that, one, I think Kelly Monty Hiller, I've just learned it the hard way too many times. You never bet against her. So I think the way that she's going to have this team hungry to compete, and they're going to be healthy this year. So that's a big, important thing. You know, Selena Lasota's back. I think Claire Quinn is one of the most exciting defensive midfielders. She just goes out there and crushes girls. You know, she gets paused turnovers, she's interceptions. You know, I think that the way that their youth has gained experience, of course, you have Shelby Fredericks on the draw. I think that they're going to be a dark horse team, which, once again, I can't even believe those words are coming out of my mouth because Northwestern kicked my butt in college for 4 years straight. But they are going to be, I think, a very tough team to top this year. And then, you know, looking at the ACC, I think that it's anyone's game, which of course is an underdog's dream. You know, if you're Virginia Tech, if you're Virginia, if you're Duke, you know, Duke did not make the NCAA tournament last year. They couldn't, they weren't 500. That's not going to happen again this year. So I'm excited to see what those quote underdogs, but still all top 20 teams do. And then out West, the Pac-12, it's kind of a wide open race. Is Stanford going to claim the crown that was once theirs for so long? You know, what can this Oregon staff accomplish in this inaugural season in the Pac-12? Or is it just going to be USC, you know, the norm? Colorado again, what do they do? So I think that that's going to be an interesting kind of underdog scenario as well.
And the big question, your Final Four prediction, way ahead Final Four.
My gosh, that's a creepy one. Well, what's your Final Four prediction? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay, I was prepared for that. Maryland and Stony Brook, for all the reasons that we've have already said, Penn State, and my fourth is going to be Boston College is back into the Final Four. Kenzie Kent joins the team, and they make a run going into the championship game.
Okay, that's a bold one. But it's, like, bold, but kind of not bold, but I get it.
They're all top six teams, so it's not that bold.
So it is, you know, I feel like that could go a few different ways. I think based on last year's results, it's bold to go with four top six teams, so I'll take it. This year, I'm going North Carolina. I think that they, every single year they miss the NCAA Final Four, they, like, come back and win it. You know, not every year, but they're always back in the Final Four. You know, last time they missed the championship weekend, they were right back there the next year. They're just there too much to not throw them in this conversation. I'm going to throw Stony Brook. I think that they're going to be fantastic this year, but their marquee motivating factor is going to be that this game is played on their home turf, and they want to be there. So I think we have Stony Brook, North Carolina. I am going to throw Northwestern in this mix. They've been out of the Final Four a little too much for my liking. I think that they have a lot more talent up there than they've had individually in seasons past, but they've really learned how to play together. I like them top to bottom. And then let's go with Maryland. I mean, I can't bet against Maryland. You can't. So I'll go with that's my Final Four.
I love it. You had the sirens in the background to go along with your hot takes there, Hallie.
I know, but I'm okay. I just want to let everyone know my building is not on fire.
Well, that's good to hear. And as always, it's good to start another year of this podcast and another year of Women's College Lacrosse. Check it all out on the Epic Inside Lacrosse scoreboard, which if you just go to the homepage of iowomen.com, you'll be directed right to that. You know, we'll be updating the scores there. Hallie, how can people follow you?
Follow me along on Twitter. I'm always trying to be better on Twitter. So I don't even like Greg or HQ Greg with the name change. So my Twitter handle is a little bit different. And follow me on Iowa Women. You know, this is the first weekend. We're excited. I'll be throwing up my Sunday post. I'm just kind of taking a look back at emerging themes from the weekend. And I'm excited for the lineup of coverage we have. You know, we have a great Iowa Women contributing team in place. Dave Batts, Lindsay Munez, Amari Pollard. Of course, we're going to have Sheehan involved with our weekly podcast as a guest consistently. You know, as we continue to increase our women's coverage, we're expanding and increasing our women's team as well. So I'm very excited for what you guys have in the 2018 season.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.